The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour One Podcast.
And very good afternoon. Welcome back. Yesterday was quite an afternoon here on the program. It ended, for those of you who weren't around, with an extended conversation with Commissioner Greg Sankey, updating us on where everything is. And that's a conversation that we've been having for a while. We'll try to broaden the horizon a little bit today. We'll, of course, include your phone calls at 855-242-7285. We begin with some good news. Ohio State, which shut things down the other day, is back up and running, resuming voluntary workouts at one of the absolute blue bloods in college football. Positive news for a change, and we certainly like to hear that. Meanwhile, Cassidy Hill reporting, as many others, that Scott Strickland, wanting to be transparent, reveals he tested positive for COVID-19 last month. He, of course, is the athletic director at the University of Florida. Says he was lucky to have only mild symptoms, but reminds everyone to do their part. And earlier, Scott spoke to the media.
I shared this with our staff yesterday. So last month, I actually tested positive myself for COVID and fortunately had mild symptoms and, was able in a couple days to kind of feel back to normal. But I just wanted to share that. And, I thought I was being careful, but obviously this is a highly transmittable disease, as Dr. Lizardo and others on campus keep reminding me. And so I do think it speaks to the importance of all of us doing our part related to masking and physical distancing and all that stuff. I do think it's really important. And I want to, hopefully we can help keep others safe during this process by doing our part.
Scott Strickland, who has been at a number of schools, most recently Mississippi State before moving to Florida about 2 years ago, one of the most respected figures in intercollegiate athletics, and certainly sharing that information. It's great to hear that he's doing well, but it does personalize it because the more people that we hear from that have experienced this virus give us hope that maybe it won't be that bad if it happens, but also admonishing all of us to be careful. I think that was really nice of Scott to share that information. Let's continue sharing some headlines. This from the University of Tennessee, the athletic David Ubben will join us later. How can they possibly save money by getting rid of a non-conference game? We'll talk about that a little bit later on as we continue. And Joey Gatewood, we last saw him at Auburn. He'll find out soon whether he'll get eligible for 2020. Other quarterbacks have. I don't know why he shouldn't. Let's hope he does. He's a great young player, and he did some really good things for Auburn before hitting the portal. We have a lot to do today. We tend to do that every day, but today's no different. Let's share with you the guest list. Daniel McGraw has written a very fascinating piece about the intersection of sports and politics. Rick Carl, David Ubben from The Athletic covers Tennessee. We'll get his take. And Pete Thamel, a couple of interesting articles. He has one out just today. This was not the main reason we decided to talk to him, about the Senate race in Alabama that's going on today between the former U.S. Attorney General and I think four-time senator there, as well as the former Auburn football coach. He'll give us some thoughts on that. But the main reason we booked Pete, not only is he one of the great writers in college football, but he did a deep dive over the weekend into the prospects of the season, what people are telling him, and what it looks like. So that's where we are. And of course, we'll share with you any news that comes along throughout the afternoon. And there is a little bit. We just learned about some sports in the SEC. The SEC announced just minutes ago that it will postpone the start of volleyball, soccer, and cross country, at least through August 31st. The delay in competition includes all exhibition and non-conference games. The ACC recently did that. So why don't we get to the phone calls at 855-242-7285 and begin with Pat. who is in Georgia. Pat, welcome to the show. Good afternoon. Thank you.
Hey, Paul. Thanks. Let's see if I'm quoting you correctly from this morning on First Take. A pile of manure, foolish, and a Sophie's Choice. I had to ask Alexa about that third one. What you think?
Well, you know, the great part about being on First Take is that you get plenty of time to think about what you want to say after Max talks.
Yes. Are we breaking up?
I tell you what, Pat, hold. Let me pause you right there because we are having a little bit of difficulty. I think I'm getting Led Zeppelin in my ear as opposed to Pat. So why don't we take a quick break? We'll see if we can replug the audio system here, and much more to come as we continue here on a Tuesday afternoon.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Yeah, welcome back. We apologize. Yeah, when you're doing it by yourself, you're running the camera, the lights, the engineering, it can get a little hairy. Just kidding, but minor glitch there, but I think we have corrected. By the way, while we were away, I saw this, and I meant to share it with you. The Vice President, Mike Pence, is in Baton Rouge today, speaking at LSU. And I believe, I don't know if he was introduced, but before the Vice President spoke, Ed Ogeron got up to speak. And he said, we need football. Football is the lifeblood of our country. He said Joe Burrow would have never been the number one pick if he had been denied last season. And Mike Pence, the Vice President, applauded Coach O and his statements. And it's hard to disagree that we do need football. That is an interesting concept. Let me finish with Pat there a minute ago. Pat, I apologize for losing you. We are back now.
Hey, Paul. Thanks. I listened to the commissioner last night, Commissioner Sankey, and I listened with both ears, and I kept having to remind myself I'm listening to Commissioner Sankey, because the more he went on, and this is not kind, but he sounded more like Bill Hancock. Did I miss something?
Yeah, I mean, I always look at it a little bit differently. Sometimes when you're talking to a person, an administrative person, it's what they say, it's what they don't say. I frankly thought he said, it's fascinating, Pat, that you say that, because I had a lot of people say, you know, asking me afterwards, well, did he say anything? What did he say? And I heard a great deal in the way he presented himself. Remember something, that, you know, he is not on an island. I mean, he just got through spending the day with 14 athletic directors, and I'm willing to bet you that there were some differing opinions in that room. And the only conclusion the SEC reached was they had not reached a conclusion. So I think he was trying to signal their path, say what they weren't going to do, but not quite prepared to say what they were going to do. In no way would I compare him to Bill Hancock. I mean, Bill Hancock basically has one product that he's selling, and it doesn't matter whether it's raining, snowing, sleeting, we're in the middle of a hurricane, a tsunami or a tornado, he's still going to sell you the same stuff. He's not going to alter his pitch. He's not going to vary it. Greg Sankey has a far bigger responsibility with what he is currently dealing with.
Well, you're absolutely right, and I did say it wasn't kind, but I kept hearing him say, I was told to take all the time I need to make this decision, and I'm just going to...
I have great respect for Commissioner Sankey, and we're friends, and I'm not. He doesn't need me to bid for him. He has used a line repeatedly. I mean, he's been on the show a dozen times since March, and he said we have the asset of time. And then finally, about 3 weeks ago, he said we had the asset of time, but it is narrowing. And last night, he essentially said we are almost out of time. I'll just give you a quick analysis if you want. You didn't pay for this, it's free. I think he was pointing at a couple of things. He was pointing at testing. He was pointing at the public health issues in the country. He was saying that we don't have to rush to make a decision on conference or no conference play because we have a little bit of a window here. But to me, he has painted a much grimmer picture in recent weeks than he has ever done before. I thought it was a dose of reality last night. That's how I took it.
And I agree with you.
Let me tell you, Bill Hancock last night would have said the sky is blue. It's Christmas, New Year's, Easter, Thanksgiving, and July 4th all wrapped into one, and nothing is going to change. I mean, that's the Bill Hancock that shovels manure when he comes on this program. And I don't say that disrespectfully. Bill Hancock is a wonderful man. He's just a terrible spokesman.
Well, I'm going to stand corrected, and I appreciate it, Paul. Thanks.
Now, listen, there's no right or wrong answer here. I'm listening for nuances, and the public is looking for answers, and you're not going to get any answers right now. Jim is up next.
Yeah, well, here's another one that's interesting today. I'll tell you, it's probably not slipped your mind. It slipped my mind until I saw this. I didn't see Tucker Carlson last night. Did you?
I've heard about it, but I did not see it. No, I was.
What did you hear? Because I'm going to follow up with what I know.
Well, I heard was that he has this person that works for him that's been accused of making racial remarks, and many were expecting Tucker to defend him. He didn't, and he announced that he was taking the rest of the week off, which sounds
good. Who's
going to
take the rest of the week off? Paul?
Tucker Carlson.
Well, that's not what I'm referring to at all. I'm referring to what he heavily touted Jeff Sessions. That's the part I'm talking about.
Well, no. I didn't know. I knew he had said that the other day. I saw Sessions on there last week when he called Sessions one of the great politicians or whatever. I can't remember the exact
All word. I know is he's been good for Alabama. He wasn't good as a DA, as an AG. He made me angry as a AG, but he's been great for Alabama, in my opinion. And here's what
Who, Jeff?
What?
Jeff Sessions, you mean?
Who else can I talk about?
On one level, I feel badly for the guy because he took a chance on a job he should have never taken. He had one of the great, one of the most secure Senate seats in America.
Well, he was good in Alabama. That's my point.
Yeah, no, he was very popular.
Let me read you what I'm going to read you, Paul.
Yeah.
I saw this, and this is what I'm referring to. First of all, Tucker tweeted a great tweet for Sessions and Sessions retweeted it this morning, and that's what I saw.
Oh, okay.
Go ahead, Paul. It's your show.
No, Jim. I've said you finished the conversation. It's all yours.
Every time you interrupt, I'm supposed to stop, aren't I? Okay, Paul. Let me go again. I'll try to do it if you'll let me. So Tucker tweeted a complimentary tweet about Sessions and referred to him being the neat man to be elected in Alabama over Tubble. Well, as you know and I know, I'd forgotten about Tubbs, and Shane and I were on this every day for about a year. Tubbs, well, let me read you the tweet this guy that I saw that this guy tweeted. He says, to Alabama voters, a man is only as good as his word. Ask the people of Mississippi. Why are you laughing, Paul?
I know what's coming. Keep going.
Ask the people of Mississippi what Tommy Tuberville some of his word is word, in caps, not much. Sessions' record on immigration speaks for itself, and he's tagged Donald Trump, Jeff Sessions, and Tucker Carlson in this tweet. I don't know if it's too late, but I wonder if that would have made a difference. I don't know why in the world Sessions' campaign didn't get a hold of that. And you know what I know. Tommy Tuberville, quote, "I will not leave Mississippi. They're not going to hire me at Auburn." And they were over every day talking to stuff. "Oh, I'm not leaving." 2 days later, he's gone. You know that. We talked about it over.
Well, yeah. I mean, if I ever told the truth about what I knew about Tuberville and Auburn at that time, it would sink a battleship, but I'm not going to today.
Well, sink it, Paul. It's time to sink it.
No, I really, because...
Paul, you can save your career if you sink this battleship today.
Because I was, it's really, I'm going to say, because I was actually a middleman. I knew Tuberville really well.
I know you were.
Yeah.
And you never interrupted me back, and Shane either, back then when we talked about Tuberville and what he did to Ole Miss. You know,
well,
that.
I mean, Tuberville and I were very good friends, as you know, and he took that job in early November. I mean, he did, that line about the Pine Box was pure theater.
Well, you tell me, Paul, there's half a day left in this election day. What do you think the people will this?
Well, one thing I will never do is get in the middle of an election.
I'm loving it, Paul. You're getting more hilarious every day. This is
no,
great.
I mean I mean
Paul Feinbaum, lots better than the sports guy.
No, I mean I. Why would I? I mean it's up to the voters of of Alabama. It's not up to me.
Hey, Paul, you remember we talked about this too. Or Al Gore in 2000 running against Bush. He said, "Look, man. People of America, we are going to steal this election fair and square."
Well, you're right. Hey, by the way, Jim, if I had known it was that easy to get elected senator in Alabama, I would have moved back and run. I've always wanted to be in the Senate.
I believe there's a great chance you can make it. What about this? Me being your campaign manager the next election? How about
well,
that?
Well, it might be. I mean, I've always thought it would be fun to be up there, just kind of hanging out and having. Having three-hour lunches.
All the fringe benefits, $200,000 a year pension.
It would be nice to be on the government payroll, yeah.
I tell you what, Paul, this is the favorite caller of all time for me with you.
Well, you know how to bring me out. By the way, did you hear what Trump said yesterday?
No, what did he say?
This is true. This is not time, President Trump was on a conference call with Tuberville, and somehow Alabama came up, and he referred to Nick Saban as Lou Saban.
Yeah, I heard that. Yeah.
Some people think he did it purposely. I don't know.
Well, he's not the greatest on personnel, as you well know.
Well, I think Lou is Nick Saban's middle name, though.
Well, it might be, but maybe did he mean the old Buffalo coach?
Well, he meant the old guy. A lot of people, there was a coach named Lou Saban for the Buffalo Bills many years ago.
Well, Paul, if you stay on this level of being a comedian rather than a serious sports guy.
Well, Jim, I just have one question for you. If I come back to Alabama and get elected, would you come to work as my
campaign manager?
Yeah.
And at the forefront.
You got a job, Jim.
Thank you. Thank you, Paul.
Make sure.
Merry Christmas.
That was a very sapient call. we'll take a break. You can't top that. I mean, we could spend the next 20 years trying to top that one. We'll be back. Speaking of elections, we are going to intersect college football and the presidential election in a minute. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul.
That's HIMS.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. HIMS.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
We welcome you back. Great to have all of you here. And we're really excited by our next guest. I read this article recently, Daniel McGraw, who is a writer. This piece appeared in the Bulwark, I'll get it right, under the heading College Football in a Pandemic and What It Could Mean for the Election. Could the decisions made by the NCAA football season affect public opinion in the swing state? We were talking about an election a minute ago in Alabama today with a former football coach, but this is a little bigger. And Daniel, thank you very much. Really interesting piece. Appreciate your writing very much, and nice of you to join us here on election day in a couple of states. Good afternoon.
Yeah, hi, Paul. Thank you.
So, as somebody who used to be a writer, I always hate for other people to put words in my mouth, but I think it's a fascinating subject that. I read the article. It's quite interesting where you're going here. Explain it to the audience, the intersection of college football, especially in some critical areas, notably in the South.
Well, it is fairly complicated, Paul, but I noticed that sort of most of the media wasn't paying attention to how college football plays into the minds of a lot of people. Okay, because it's on TV and it's Saturday afternoon for people that went to those schools or not. So I kind of looked at 10 swing states, states in play. Georgia, Florida, Arizona, Iowa, Michigan, Ohio, North Carolina, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Texas. Okay, those states have 23 of the Power 5 conference schools in them. And that's about a third. Now, all those states are close. If college football is on in some form or fashion this fall, Donald Trump could take credit for it in some form or fashion, as he does, and say, I got your football, folks. So I think that you should vote for me instead of Biden. And in these swing states that are very close right now, if you move that needle a point or two, it makes a difference. However, there's tons of other factors at play here. It's not that simple. But Trump has repeatedly pointed towards sports in the fall as us getting back to some sort of form of normalcy, okay? And college football might be the one to do it. However, in the last couple of weeks, there's so much uncertainty right now that I'm not sure how this is going to go.
You know, it's interesting. Vice President Pence is in Baton Rouge as we're speaking at a return to football conference, and Ed Orgeron, the national championship coach, got up and said, "We have to have football. It's the lifeblood of our country." On this show, it is the lifeblood of our country. I'm not sure it is on other shows, but I want to dig deeper here because.
Yeah.
And again, you know, politics can't help but find politics in every nook and cranny of this country. But one thing we've tried to look at is the politicization of this virus, and now it is in the football realm, where I was talking to a friend of mine, a journalist today, who has been somewhat critical of the push to have college football, and if you question whether it's a good idea or not, you get labeled pretty quickly, as you know.
Oh, I've been labeled everything. I've been labeled the fake news, libtard, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. In this case, here's what the problem is for Trump, okay? How sort of politicians have used sports like this is to say, there's been problems, and in order to get back to normalcy, we have to fix this, and sort of having sports on is going to help us. This happened in 1942, where the sort of Major League Baseball Landis asked FDR if they should keep playing sort of baseball, even with World War II starting up, and FDR said yes, because people need to feel good about things. when sort of Bush after sort of 9/11 wanted to get baseball back going, and he made some speeches about how we have to fight this and work hard at it. What's happened with Trump is that he's not admitting that there's any problem, first of all. He's pointing to people around him, saying all these people have screwed up, not me. And he's not offering any empathy on this. And the schools and the NCAA and the conferences and the locals and the states and the counties and everyone aren't kind of putting a helpful message forward on this. So that's why I'm thinking that in order for this to help Trump, he's going to have to find some way to take credit for it, first of all, which is not playing into his hands right now. And second of all, it's going to have to be more than just interconference games in a few conferences. Okay? If they put it off until spring, he can't use it.
But Daniel, let me ask you, why? I mean, there are a lot of sports going on right now. I mean, right. The NBA, all these other, the NFL is about to start, MLB, soccer. Why is college football more critical than the rest of them?
Well, here's what I'm finding out, based on my former drinking days and bar going, is that bars do their most business on Saturdays and sort of during the week, if there's college games on sort of Tuesday and Wednesday. So in the National Football League, gets good play on the TVs at home, but not many people are hitting bars all day on a Sunday. But people are hitting bars all day on a Saturday. That's for damn sure. So consequently, college football has almost as many viewers as the viewers in the National Football League. So it's a huge audience. It also skews across race and gender equally. It's age as well. So it's got a sort of universal appeal more so than those other leagues do. But here's the problem that the college football has, is that pro sports have paid athletes. And they're making their deals with their paid athletes. Okay, so if there's problems with the NBA in Orlando, or how the National Football League wants to do it, or sort of Major League Baseball, they have unions representing those athletes. In this case, there's no one in leadership that wants to take a stand on this. And sort of just in those Power Five conferences, you have like sort of 12,000 athletes. And there's no say that they have. So it's kind of in limbo in a lot of ways, and they could change that if they have just taken a stand on this a few months ago.
Yeah, I mean, we're dealing with it every day now, and it's now mid-July, Daniel, and the reality is coming home. We had the commissioner last night of the Southeastern Conference on, and he has been cautiously advising his constituency, which is right here.
Thank you.
You know, we have the asset of time, but we don't really have that any longer, do we?
No, because this is the thing that, and I know that sometimes with sports talk radio that I've been listening to, sometimes we're speaking to an audience that has conspiracy theories and all sorts of stuff going on. Is that what happens with this stuff is that if you're getting high new case counts being registered, the bad stuff happens 10 to 14 days later, okay? Because that's when the beds in the hospitals, ICUs fill up, that's when the death starts going up, and et cetera. That's not changing either. That's how this works. So they're hitting high numbers now, okay? That means the death numbers are going to still be up there, not like they were 2 months ago, but still be up there at the end of this month, in the beginning of August. Well, that's kind of getting a little late in the game, okay? Because if, on this day right now, Alabama has hit 40 deaths, okay? That's the largest they've had on any day, okay? Florida right now has 132 deaths, also their highest, okay? So by not taking a stand on this and sort of letting these things play out, it looks like it's going down a road that they can't turn back on.
And speaking of politics, President Trump appointee, at least for now, Robert Redfield, Dr. Redfield, who's the CDC director, and certainly yeah. everyone's followed about it. He just got through saying a minute ago, I'm going to read you this quote and have you analyze. Okay. It's not hard to analyze, by the way. He said, I do think the fall and winter of 20 and 21 are going to be probably one of the most difficult times that we've experienced in American public health.
Well, yeah. I mean, part of the thing that I'm seeing here is that if you go back to 2018 and you kind of look at the Spanish flu thing there, it hit pretty big in the spring, and then it kind of went away for a little bit in the summer, and then it hit big time in the fall. And again, people keep trying to say how there's this is a hoax and all this stuff that's going on. It couldn't be happening, this or that. If you look at the numbers, this thing is happening, and it's happening big time and looks to be getting bigger. Right now, there's about 138,000 people have died from this. And I always like to try to put this stuff in context. So that's 138,000, which is roughly about sort of 40,000 each month so far of the 3.5 months. On average, 40,000 sort of women die of sort of breast cancer each year, okay? 40,000 a year. And by seeing 40,000 a year, football players wear pink shoes and we try to get programs to help people and we spend money on research and all that kind of stuff. Well, this pandemic at the end of 12 months might be 10 to 12 times as much as that. That's why this is a huge issue. And sometimes people keep saying, well, you know, it was 2,500 cases, deaths a day, and now it's only 1,000. And I'm like, well, 1,000 is still a lot, folks. Okay, I mean, let's get it through our head. So part of the problem in terms of politics that works for Biden on this is that Biden just has to sit in the background and not say anything. Okay, because this, if they push college football in the fall, there's going to be all sorts of stuff that they're going to have to deal with. And one is travel of the team, and the other is what to do with tailgaters who want to gather outside the stadium, whether to let people in or not, how this affects the college campuses in terms of where people live and if they're going to classes in person or not. There's all sorts of things that can play out here. And I'm not seeing anyone from the NCAA to the football conference, to the sports conferences, to the state legislatures, to Trump or anyone saying that this will help us beat this thing if we do play football. Instead, they're saying, oh, I'm not seeing much of anything anyway. Okay? I don't think that plays well in the voting public.
Daniel McGraw, interesting piece on the intersection of college football and the election. Daniel, thank you for coming on. I really do appreciate it.
Okay, Paul, thank you. Thank you for having me.
You be well. Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Great to have you on. We will take a break and get some of your reaction to that. More guests to come as we continue here on a Tuesday afternoon.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Welcome back. Great to have all of you here. And let us get to the calls here and check in with Shannon, who is in Georgia. Shannon, thanks for being here. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Paul. Hey, your last guest on the opposite side of the coin, not only would it benefit Trump to get a return to normalcy, but it obviously benefits his opponents to keep things locked down the way they are. And that's, I guess, one of the things that really bothers me about the whole situation. The reason I was calling, though, Paul, I guess Fox 35 out of Orlando had a pretty interesting report that came out today. I don't know if you saw it or not, where I guess Florida COVID-19 tested locations were reporting 93%, 98%, 100% positive rates of return on the testing, and an abnormally high positive percentage of returns.
Yes.
And they did some actual journalism, which appears to be fairly rare in today's society, and found out that there's a lot of errors in the reporting. I mean, some that were supposedly 98% positive on total results actually are like 9% positive, and then some that were 76% positive for test results actually turned out to be only 6% positive. Before we make any decisions in the SEC and for college football, is there any way we can check the actual data?
That's a good, hey, Shannon, to support your point, I won't reveal. A friend of mine told me a story recently that he had a daughter that had an appointment at a drugstore, a CVS, a Walgreens, wherever they're doing these testings, and she canceled the appointment. And they called her a couple of days later and said her test came back positive.
Yeah, you know, and we're reading, and Paul, I mean, like I told you yesterday, I follow this stuff probably way too closely, to be honest. And there's too many instances of stories throughout the media, social media, individual journalism, independent journalism, that's coming back saying that, hey, these results are not 100% accurate, you know? And then you look at what the CDC says is a positive test result anyway, Paul, I'm sure you're aware of this, but on their website, they say, hey, if you test positive, it means that you're testing positive for coronavirus, or it could mean you're testing positive for antibodies, or it could mean you're testing positive for a virus related to coronavirus, and it actually says on the CDC website, such as the common cold. So a positive test result is a fairly broad result, and then we're finding out the results with these testing facilities are inaccurate. And yet we're basically making a decision that's going
well,
to...
Well, I think in the college football platform, it was interesting. Ed Ogeron today at this deal with Pence said that, yeah, he found out that a lot of his players tested positive after going to a party. And he said, I guarantee you they're not going back to any more parties. But the problem is, as you know, and I think you heard the commissioner say yesterday, the testing is not uniform. And I think ultimately that's college football's biggest problem, is that everybody has a different standard. So you don't really know what one school is doing or how they're doing it.
Yeah, too many different standards and too many different agendas.
Well, Shannon, I agree with you on that. And I'm not sure what the right answer is yet, but I do think you have to factor all these things in.
Well, I'm not giving up hope yet, Paul. Hope endures. I'm just very hopeful that we'll get this straightened out before it's too late.
I think we both want the same thing. I would at least like to see them exhaust every possibility.
Yes, sir. And I would hate to think of all these kids who stayed for their senior year to participate and then see it go away.
Thank you very much. I was on a program today on ESPN, and one of the hosts said, you know, the whole thing, we just shut it down. It's over. And I can't buy that. I mean, I know their problems. Anyone knows that. And the commissioner, I think, eloquently pointed that out last night. But why shut it down now? I mean, what are you gaining? 3 more hours to go. Stick around.